yourselves, and do not you yourself desire and labor after the very same thing? But you insist, Mr. Wesley affirms the Methodists, that is, all Methodists, to be perfectly holy and righteous. Where do I affirm this? Not in the tract before us. In the front of this, I affirm just the contrary, and that I affirm it anywhere else is more than I know. Be pleased, sir, to point out the place. Till this is done, all you add, bitterly enough, is mere brutum fulmen. And the Methodists, so-called, may still declare, without any impeachment of their sincerity, that they do not come to the holy table trusting in their own righteousness, but in God's manifold and great mercies. I am, sir, yours, John Wesley. The Sexton's Strange Apparition. Saturday, August 1st. Before I left Glasgow, I heard so strange an account that I desire to hear it from the person himself. He was a sexton, and yet for many years had little troubled himself about religion. I set down his words and leave every man to form his own judgment upon them. 16 weeks ago, I was walking an hour before sunset behind the high kirk, and looking on one side, I saw one close to me who looked in my face and asked me how I did. I answered, pretty well. He said, you have had many troubles, but how have you improved them? He then told me all that ever I did, yea, and the thoughts that had been in my heart, adding, be ready for my second coming. And he was gone, I knew not how. I trembled all over and had no strength in me, but sank down to the ground. From that time I groaned continually under the load of sin, till at the Lord's Supper it was all taken away. Friday, September 25th. I was desired to preach at Freshford, but the people durst not come to the house because of the smallpox, of which Joseph Allen, an Israelite indeed, had died the day before. So they placed a table near the churchyard, but I had no sooner begun to speak than the bells began to ring, by the procurement of a neighboring gentleman. However, it was labor lost, for my voice prevailed, and the people heard me distinctly. Nay, a person extremely deaf, who had not been able to hear a sermon for several years, told his neighbors with great joy that he had heard and understood all, from the beginning to the end. Monday, November 23rd, I went to Canterbury. Here I met with the Life of Mohammed, written, I suppose, by the Count de Boulainvilliers. Whoever the author is, he is a very pert, shallow, self-conceited coxcomb, remarkable for nothing but his immense assurance and thorough contempt of Christianity. And the book is a dull, ill-digested romance, supported by no authorities at all. Whereas Dean Prideaux, a writer of 10 times his sense, cites his authorities for everything he advances. In the afternoon I rode to Dover, but the gentleman I was to lodge with was gone a long journey. He went to bed well, but dead in the morning. Such a vapor is life. At 6 I preached, but the house would by no means contain the congregation. Most of the officers of the garrison were there. I have not found so much life here for some years. Sunday, December 13. Today I found a little soreness on the edge of my tongue, which the next day spread to my gums, then to my lips, which inflamed, swelled, and the skin bursting, bled considerably. Afterward, the roof of my mouth was extremely sore, so that I could chew nothing. To this was added a continual spitting. I knew a little rest would cure all, but this was not to be had, for I had appointed to be at Sheerness on Wednesday the 16th. Accordingly, I took horse between 5 and 6 and came thither between 5 and 6 in the evening. At 6:30, I began reading prayers, the governor of the fort having given me the use of the chapel, and afterward preached, though not without difficulty, to a large and serious congregation. The next evening it was considerably increased, so that the chapel was as hot as an oven, and coming out the air being exceedingly sharp quite took away my voice, so that I knew not how I should be able the next day to read prayers or preach to so large a congregation. But in the afternoon the governor cut the knot, sending word that I must preach in the chapel no more. A room being offered which held full as many people as I was able to preach to, we had a comfortable hour, and many seemed resolved to seek the Lord while he may be found. Such a town as many of these live in is scarcely to be found again in England. In the dock adjoining the fort there are 6 old men of war. These are divided into small tenements, 40, 50, or 60 in a ship, with little chimneys and windows, and each of these contains a family. In one of them, where we called, a man and his wife and six little children lived. And yet all the ship was sweet and tolerably clean, sweeter than most sailing ships I have been in. Saturday the 19th, I returned to London. Marshalsea Prison, 1768, January 2nd. I called on a poor man in the Marshalsea, whose case appeared to be uncommon. He is by birth a Dutchman, a chemist by profession. Being but half employed at home, he was advised to come to London, where he doubted not of having full employment. He was recommended to a countryman of his to lodge, who after 6 weeks arrested him for much more than he owed, and hurried him away to prison, having a wife near her time, without money, friend, or a word of English to speak. I wrote the case to Mr. T., who immediately gave £15, by means of which, with a little addition, he was set at liberty and put in a way of living. But I never saw him since, and for good reason, for he could now live without me. Monday the 4th. At my leisure hours this week, I read Dr. Presley's ingenious book on electricity. He seems to have accurately collected and well digested all that is known on that curious subject. But how little is that all? Indeed, the use of it we know, at least, in some good degree. We know it is a thousand medicines in one, in particular, that it is the most efficacious medicine in nervous disorders of every kind which has ever yet been discovered. But if we aim at theory, we know nothing. We are soon lost and bewildered in the fruitless search. Monday the 11th. This week I spent my scraps of time in reading Mr. Woodrow's History of the Sufferings of the Church of Scotland. It would transcend belief, but that the vouchers are too authentic to admit of any exception. Oh, what a blessed governor was that good-natured man, so-called King Charles II. Bloody Queen Mary was a lamb, a mere dove, in comparison to him. Monday, February 8th. I met with a surprising poem entitled Choholith, or The Preacher. It is a paraphrase in tolerable verse on the book of Ecclesiastes. I really think the author of it, a Turkey merchant, understands both the difficult expressions and the connection of the whole better than any other, either ancient or modern, writer whom I have seen. He was at Lisbon during the great earthquake, just then sitting in his nightgown and slippers. Before he could dress himself, part of the house he was in fell and blocked him up. By this means his life was saved, for all who had run out were dashed in pieces by the falling houses. Wesley travels north. Monday, March 14. I set out on my northern journey and preached at Stroud in the evening. Tuesday the 15th, about noon I preached at Painswick and in the evening at Gloucester. The mob here was for a considerable time both noisy and mischievous, but an honest magistrate, taking the matter in hand, quickly tamed the beasts of the people. So may any magistrate, if he will, so that wherever a mob continues any time, all they do is to be imputed not so much to the rabble as to the justices. Wednesday the 16th, about 9, I preached at Cheltenham, a quiet, comfortable place, though it would not have been so if either the rector or the Anabaptist minister could have prevented it. Both these have blown the trumpet with their might, but the people had no ears to hear. In the afternoon, I preached at Upton and then rode on to Worcester. But the difficulty was where to preach. No room was large enough to contain the people, and it was too cold for them to stand abroad. At length we went to a friend's, near the town whose barn was larger than many churches. Here a numerous congregation stood assembled, and again at 5 and at 10 in the morning. Nothing is wanting here but a commodious house, and will not God provide this also? Friday the 18th. The vicar of Pebworth had given notice in the church on Sunday that I was to preach there on Friday, but the squire of the parish said, "It is contrary to the canons, wise squire, and it shall not be." So I preached about a mile from it, at Broadmarston, by the side of Mr. Eden's house. The congregation was exceedingly large and remarkably attentive. In the morning, the chapel, so it anciently was well filled at 5. The simplicity and earnestness of the people promises a glorious harvest. Saturday the 19th, we rode to Birmingham. The tumults which subsisted here so many years are now wholly suppressed by a resolute magistrate. After preaching, I was pleased to see a venerable monument of antiquity, George Bridgens, in the 107th year of his age. He can still walk to the preaching and retains his sentence and understanding tolerably well. But what a dream will even a life of 100 years appear to him the moment he awakes in eternity. Preaching in a North Wind. Sunday the 20th, about 1, I was on West Bromwich Heath in the evening near the preaching house in Wednesbury. The north wind cut like a razor, but the congregation and I as well had something else to think of. Tuesday the 22nd, I read over a small book, Poems, by Miss Watley, a farmer's daughter. She had little advantage from education, but an astonishing genius. Some of her elegies, I think, quite equal to Mr. Gray's. If she had had proper helps for a few years, I question whether she would not have excelled any female poet that ever yet appeared in England. Wednesday the 30th, I rode to a little town called New Mills in the high peak of Derbyshire. I preached at noon in their large new chapel, which, in consideration that preaching houses have need of air, has a casement in every window, 3 inches square. This is the custom of the country. Wesley instructs parents. In the evening and the following morning, I brought strange things to the ears of many in Manchester concerning the government of their families and the education of their children, but some still made that very silly answer. Oh, he has no children of his own. Neither had St. Paul, nor, that we know, any of the apostles. What then? Were they therefore unable to instruct parents? Not so. They were able to instruct everyone that had a soul to be saved. Wednesday, April 6th. About 11, I preached at Wigan in a place near the middle of the town, which I suppose was formerly a playhouse. It was very full and very warm. Most of the congregation were wild as wild might be, yet none made the least disturbance. Afterward, as I walked down the street, they stared sufficiently, but none said an uncivil word. In the evening, we had a huge congregation at Liverpool, but some pretty, gay, fluttering things did not behave with so much good manners as the mob at Wigan. The congregation in general were quite well behaved, as well as large, both morning and evening, and I found the society both more numerous and more lively than ever it was before. Monday the 11th, I rode to Bolton. On Wednesday to Kendal. See, Cedars and Mongrel Methodists have so surfeited the people here that there is small prospect of doing good. However, I once more cast my bread upon the waters and left the event to God. Thursday the 14th, I rode on through continued rain to Ambleside. It cleared up before we came to Keswick, and we set out thence in a fair day. But on the mountains, the storm met us again and beat on us so impetuously that our horses could scarcely turn their faces against it. However, we made shift to reach Cockermouth, but there was no room for preaching, the town being in an uproar through the election for members of Parliament. So after drying ourselves, we thought it best to go on to Whitehaven. Wesley and Mary Queen of Scots. Tuesday the 26th, I came to Aberdeen. Here I found a society truly alive, knit together in peace and love. The congregations were large, both morning and evening, and as usual, deeply attentive. But a company of strolling players who had at length found place here also stole away the gay part of the hearers. Poor Scotland, poor Aberdeen. This only was wanting to make them as completely irreligious as England. Friday the 29th. I read over an extremely sensible book, but one that surprised me much. It is an inquiry into the proofs of the charges commonly advanced against Mary, Queen of Scots. By means of original papers, he has made it more clear than one would imagine it possible at this distance. One, that she was altogether innocent of the murder of Lord Darnley, and no way privy to it. Two, that she married Lord Bothwell, then nearly 70 years old, herself but 24. from the pressing instance of the nobility in a body, who at the same time assured her he was innocent of the king's murder. 3, that Murray, Morton, and Lethington themselves contrived that murder in order to charge it upon her, as well as forge those vile letters and sonnets which they palmed upon the world for hers. But how then can we account for the quite contrary story, which has been almost universally received? Most easily. It was penned and published in French, English, and Latin by Queen Elizabeth's order, by George Buchanan, who was secretary to Lord Murray and in Queen Elizabeth's pay, so he was sure to throw dirt enough. Nor was she at liberty to answer for herself. But what then was Queen Elizabeth? As just and merciful as Nero and as good a Christian as Mohammed. Sunday, May 1st. I preached at 7 in the new room in the afternoon at the College Kirk in Old Aberdeen. At 6, knowing our house could not contain the congregation, I preached in the castle gate on the paved stones. A large number of people were all attention, but there were many rude, stupid creatures round about them who knew as little of reason as of religion. I never saw such brutes in Scotland before. One of them threw a potato which fell on my arm. I turned to them, and some were ashamed. Wesley at Scone and Holyrood. Monday the 2nd, I set out early from Aberdeen and about noon preached in Brecon. After sermon, the provost desired to see me and said, "Sir, my son had epileptic fits from his infancy. Dr. Ogilvy prescribed for him many times and at length told me he could do no more. I desired Mr. Blair last Monday to speak to you. On Tuesday morning, my son said to his mother that he had just been dreaming that his fits were gone and he was perfectly well. Soon after, I gave him the drops you advised. He is perfectly well and has not had one fit since." Thursday the 5th. We rode through the pleasant and fruitful Garth of Gowrie, a plain 15 or 16 miles long between the River Tay and the mountains, very thickly inhabited, to Perth. In the afternoon, we walked over to the Royal Palace at Scone. It is a large old house, delightfully situated, but swiftly running to ruin. Yet there are a few good pictures and some fine tapestry left in what they call the Queen's and the King's Chambers. And what is far more curious, there is a bed and a set of hangings in the once royal apartment, which was wrought by poor Queen Mary while she was imprisoned in the castle of Loch Leven. It is some of the finest needlework I have ever seen, and plainly shows both her exquisite skill and unwearied industry. Saturday the 14th, I walked once more through Holyrood House, a noble pile of building, but the greatest part of it left to itself and so, like the palace at Scone, swiftly running to ruin. The tapestry is dirty and quite faded, the fine ceilings dropping down. Many of the pictures in the gallery are torn or cut through. This was the work of good General Hawley's soldiers, like general, like men, who, after running away from the Scots at Falkirk, revenged themselves on the harmless canvas. Sunday the 15th. At 8, I preached in the high school yard, and I believe not a few of the hearers were cut to the heart. Between 12 and 1, a far larger congregation assembled on the castle hill. I believe my voice commanded them all while I opened and enforced those awful words. I saw the dead, small and great, stand before God. Revelation 20:12. In the evening, our house was sufficiently crowded, even with the rich and honorable. Who hath warned these to flee from the wrath to come? Matthew 3:7. Oh, may they at length awake and rise from the dead. Wesley's old schoolfellow. Wednesday, June 1st. Many of the militia were present at Barnard Castle in the evening and behaved with decency. I was well pleased to lodge at a gentleman's, an old schoolfellow, half a mile from the town.